Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
The Museum of the American Revolution opened in Philly on April 19th. It was built with more than $150 million in mostly private donations and occupies a prime piece of patriotic real estate in historic Philly, right across from Alexander Hamilton's first Bank of the United States and a few blocks from Independence Hall. But just what does this museum tell the visitor about the American Revolution? Yes, the museum grew out of the collection of the Valley Forge Historical Society, but can it be depended upon as being accurate, or do those creating the displays have an agenda? My guest today is Karis Coker. She's co-chair of the Bill of Rights Bicentennial Committee, and she has led many tours throughout the Philadelphia area, and we'll get into more details about that in a little bit. Thanks, Karis, for being with us.
Privilege and honor, Diane.
So you and your husband actually attended the week before.
We had a pre-opening event for members.
Okay.
We had supported the museum. I'm sure we are not their largest supporters, but we had contributed and looked forward to its opening. And on April the 15th, they had a preview opening for members, and that's when we attended.
Okay. And what was your impression at that point?
Well, going through, it was wonderful to see the many things that were portrayed and presented, and different facts of the war, the Liberty Tree, the various things. But as you continue, you realize that the one thing that's absent was the hand of God, without mention, which was a real tragedy, because the heart of the collection that has resulted in the Museum of the American Revolution was by Reverend Burke, who founded the Washington Memorial Chapel and raised money, and his own finances went into collecting this large collection of items and memorabilia connected to Valley Forge. And that's the heart of the collection that has resulted in the Museum of the American Rev.
And they totally ignored that.
Well, they do mention it in a seminar that's offered. They tell how it came to be, and it's in there. But as far as the presentation of the story itself, it's not there. It's not there.
Wow.
Which was just, I mean, there are so many things that could be brought in, which is what we want to do here. Is
right,
to bring
yeah,
in
exactly.
Those aspects.
So the collection there, the Valley Forge collection, which is the basic, is the essence of the museum, that was actually put together with the private funds of, or majority of it was with the private funds of a reverend, minister.
And he's the one who envisioned having a wayside chapel, which is now the Valley Forge, Washington Memorial Chapel at Valley Forge. And there was a historical society that was organized, the Valley Forge Historical Association, that began these efforts. And their prize item was Washington's marquee, which Edmund Burke raised the funds for to purchase from Robert E. Lee's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she was trying to raise money to care for the widows and orphans of the Civil War, the Confederate soldiers.
Wow.
And so she sold the tent, and he raised the money to purchase it, and they added to it. Now, the Valley Forge Historical Association, after they donated their collection, which was the largest collection of those kind of things,
mm-hmm.
to the newly formed Museum of the American Revolution 10, 15 years ago, they then merged with the Friends of Valley Forge Park and have come there, and I got to know many of those folks through the Friends of Valley Forge Park, but now it's all under a new name called the Valley Forge Park Alliance, but that's the etymology of the group that selected those items.
So it's Valley Forge Park Alliance now.
Correct.
It's a name after merging. So I read a New York Times article, it was April 13th, and that notes that one tabloid depicts some of the thousands of enslaved people who fought for the British. Quote what it says on the wall. It says, sometimes freedom wore a red coat. What's your take on that?
Well, that is true. Mm-hmm. British did offer to many
freedom.
Other folks,
mm-hmm.
if they would fight for them, they would offer them their freedom.
Which I find that very funny, because slavery was going full force in Great Britain at that time.
It was a military maneuver.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, the king had blocked colonies who tried to abolish slavery here in this country. So
absolutely. In fact, Virginia had petitioned the crown 3 times before independence to stop the importation of slaves.
3 times? Virginia did?
Yeah. Wow. Virginia. And the British would not allow them, which that's a whole other story.
Oh, yeah.
Story of slavery. But this brings up another point, Diane, and this is the heart of the way things are presented. While Washington still gets his credit there, there is a, and has been for several years, a different perspective on history. And it was summed up by the remarks of a professor, Rufus Spears, who's no longer living. He was a professor at the University of Oklahoma. But we have purchased some of his courses through Great Courses, a teaching company.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. And he has a series on YouTube about freedom that I really look forward to watching. But he said there are 2 theories on history. There are some who say that history is made up of anonymous social and economic forces. Now, we know that theory is rooted in Marxist communism. That is the theory of Marxist communism.
Anonymous.
Right. It's anonymous social and economic forces, and it's just the masses that are shifting through these different stages. And the other view, which is accurate, and to my belief it's the hand of God in it, is that history is made up by outstanding individuals.
Yeah.
And his quote was, by titanic individuals who changed the course of history.
Well, yeah, I can't think with this, if we'd even be a country if it wasn't for George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and all those guys.
Correct.
Oh, my goodness. What was his first name?
Rufus Spears, F-E-A-R-S. He's a professor at the University
right.
of Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Wow, I'll have to check into that.
But
wow.
This is what we're facing, and all the exhibits that are coming along these days seem to promote and the average person had his part to play.
Right.
And a leader cannot lead an army that's non-existent.
True.
But without that leadership, and what direction are they going to take it? What are they going to do with the resources they had? And frankly, that touches to the individual that you and I have talked about for this program today, and that is General von Steuben.
Right, right. And he was given a prominent role, shall I say, but it was used to promote the idea that he was homosexual and that Benjamin Franklin was the father of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Well, now, this is a very interesting, and it's a nuance. Now, those things, as you have just expressed them, are just in the article, and which, for your listening audience, we need to go back to the story that's presented at the Museum of the American Revolution. Now, when we went through it, the capstone of what really troubled us and disturbed us was this idea that, in wrapping it up, so the American Revolution is an ongoing revolution, and it began in 1776, but it didn't end in 1783.
Hmm.
It's ongoing. And there was the chapter of the Civil War to end slavery. Then there was the Civil Rights chapter. And then there was the feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And today the revolution is ongoing in the LGBT movement.
So that was right there in the museum.
Yeah. Well, those were the spoken words of the guide. It's not written along the way.
Okay.
And the remarks... Then you had forwarded me a copy of an article I had not seen. It's on the Philadelphia Gay newspaper of June 28, 2017 by Mark Siegel. And the quote in there about it was their assumption, don't ask, don't tell. I don't know that that's included in the exhibit, but this was their take.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they acknowledge in the article that the LGBT community went to the curators of the museum as they were getting it put together to make sure that their treatment...
They were included,
They were included. And as far as the museum collection itself goes, it just says that there were charges against von Steuben.
Mm-hmm. Unsubstantiated.
Unsubstantiated. Mm-hmm. And so they build this huge thing on unsubstantiated things. The author makes reference to a book by Paul Lockhart, called The Drillmaster of Valley Forge, which book I heard Mr. Lockhart speak when the book first came out, and I have a copy of it. So I went to read through it thoroughly and again. And there were speculations, but that could have easily been interpreted to be slander unjustified against the man.
Okay, yeah. Because people didn't
like... There's no sound evidence.
Mm-hmm. No evidence at all.
Well, there's circumstantial evidence that could go one way or the other.
Okay.
For example, he... was a up-and-coming officer headed for a marvelous career and had marvelous accomplishments already in the King of Prussia's army. In fact, the King of Prussia, Frederick, was his godfather. Steuben came from very high birth, even though they were not wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But Frederick was his godfather, and thus his name, Frederick von Steuben, along with others.
Right.
But he was then at one point assigned to under Prince Henry, who was known to have homosexual inclinations,
oh,
and
Prince.
He had an eye, as it was known, for handsome young officers.
So Prince Henry had that.
Prince Henry had that, and that's known.
Mm.
But Prince Henry also had a very vindictive, shall I say, manner toward officers who he ruined the careers of several good men, including von Steuben.
Okay.
Now, it could be as easily speculated that Prince Henry ruined Steuben's career in the Prussian army because he resisted his advances.
Yeah. Could all depends on the eyes of the beholder, so to speak, or the one who's reading it. So there's no evidence, but yet they've latched on to, and in fact it says, from what I've read, there's an original mural featuring von Steuben drilling the troops at Valley Forge, and the museum has under that picture, though the army didn't ask and he didn't tell, von Steuben is thought by some historians to have been gay. That's in those words are in the museum. Again, as you're pointing out, that's all in how the story is interpreted. So.
And then the article that you forwarded me to have a look at, they state that numerous times he was accused.
Yeah.
But that is numerous times is a great overstatement. And the Prince Henry, being as vindictive as he was, there were rumors that arose later when Steuben was the head of a household of a nobleman.
Mm-hmm.
But could that have been rumors that surfaced for Prince Henry's vindictiveness or people who just didn't like Steuben?
Yeah.
And also,
they were jealous of him. That's what it sounds like, of his military advance, quick advance there.
Well, there was a 10-year looking for employment after he
got
out of the Russian army, and it was like pillar to post and trying to find a way to earn an honorable living.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's when he ended up in Paris. He met someone who told him what was going on there.
Yeah, wow.
But to say that there were numerous occasions and numerous charges, that is not so. And the man who had employed him, to my recollection, did not validate those charges as having merit.
Wow.
And there's another key little thing before we move on, and that is that Lockhart's volume also included that late in Steuben's life, he accidentally dropped out of his vest pocket a small portrait of a beautiful young woman, and one of his close associates asked him about it, and he said, "Oh, she was one of the best women I ever knew," and put it away.
Wow.
So.
And
he was known to enjoy flirting around. But.
Wow. It's that article you referred to. It said that the founding fathers not only had us in mind, referring to homosexuals, when founding this country, but also expected us to have equality or what could pass for equality at that time, totally ignoring the fact that sodomy was illegal in all 13 colonies.
Well, it depends on how you're defining equality.
Oh, I suppose.
I mean, they certainly did not expect a man to be...
the same sex to be able to marry and such like that. They didn't expect...
Well, also, in the matters of liberty, as they understood it, they expected an individual to be able to own property. If he was robbed, to take the case to court.
Mm-hmm.
He was assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
Or the one who assaulted him to be prosecuted.
Right, right.
But when they spoke of, in the Declaration of Independence, to which they dedicated their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, and they fought to protect the acquisition and protection of their name and their character and their reputation.
Yeah.
They certainly considered such charges to be against a man's character and reputation and honor, and no man of honor and good reputation would do such, would conduct himself
exactly.
in such a manner.
Yeah. They definitely understood the danger of normalizing homosexual or sodomy. They didn't hesitate.
Well, you have the case there at Valley Forge. One of the trials at Valley Forge was where one soldier sodomized another.
Yeah, and when they were in camp there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. George Washington did not hesitate to bring that man to have the trial, and then he was drummed out of the military.
Correct.
And that's a perfect example of their true thought on sodomy. So there were a couple other examples that they have there in the museum. There's a scene of two Quaker women visiting American prisoners of war at Independence Hall. This is what the scene depicts. It's based on the diary of a Quaker woman who wrote about the, quote, two Hannah Catherals, I guess is how you pronounce the last name. Uh-huh. And it does note that there's ambiguity in this scene, but Dr. Philip Mead, who's the museum's director of curatorial affairs, I probably didn't pronounce it right, and chief historian, he says that while we may not be able to prove that, we thought some of these displays were useful in getting people to think about the presence of the gay community here in Philadelphia in the 18th century. Again, that's
an
agenda.
Well, in my perspective, I would say that's a horrible thing to indict two women who were not.
There was no evidence.
There's no clear evidence.
Yeah,
this is their speculation.
Yeah.
And to present their story as if it's very possible or probable that they were is an injustice to the women. There is not hard evidence.
No, there's not. Same thing with supposed transgender in the War for Independence, and that is Deborah Sampson, who fought. It says, you'll learn here that during the Revolutionary War, she dressed as a man to join the 4th Massachusetts Regiment. She saw combat and was discovered after she was wounded. She was honorably discharged from the Continental Army on the basis of her gender and later published a memoir of her experiences.
She dressed as a man because
wanted
to join.
Yeah, exactly.
She didn't dress as a man because she wanted to
be. Exactly. And I'm thinking, well, what's her history? What's her history? Was it that her husband or her brother was killed and she wanted to get, you know, I want to fight the British because of what has happened to my family? Yeah, I agree. She dressed as a man so she could fight, not that she wanted to be a man.
They do a great injustice to the character of these folks where there's not hard, but see, where people don't view it as an honor to wear that label, they don't consider it a slam against their character.
Yeah.
So it depends on what is your moral basis
and how you
what
view
it. What is the foundation of your law, and certainly the foundation as the Founding Fathers stated it. Well, I think John Adams expressed it that a free people required a people who would keep the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, absolutely. And you responded in the email where I sent you that article, you responded concerning these displays, quote, speculation looking back through the corrupted lenses of 21st century libertines. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's how you, I was just referring to your view of the world, and is there a creator? I tell you, this goes back also to 1991 in Philadelphia, where the Bill of Rights bicentennial display. We attended that morning and found out that afternoon that the honored guests for the Bill of Rights bicentennial observance at Independence Park were to be the leading actors in a summer-long production of Inherit the Wind.
Oh, you're kidding.
And what connection does that have to the Bill of Rights except to slap the creator in the face?
Absolutely. For folks who explain what that is for folks who don't know what that is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Inherit the Wind was a production, a play written in the 1950s. It's about the monkey trial, as it's commonly referred to, but it was a trial in 1925 at the Ray County Courthouse in Dayton, Tennessee, where Scopes was on trial for teaching evolution, which was against the law in Tennessee. He lost.
Right.
And his attorney, Clarence Darrow, who was a terrible, terrible man.
Yeah.
His legal record is very patchy, dark, and shadowy. He is certainly, but he's the darling and one of the founders, frankly, of the ACLU.
Mm-hmm. And we tend to forget that he lost.
Right, he lost.
Yeah.
He lost.
Yeah, wow.
So anyway, Inherit the Wind was a very inaccurate, grotesquely inaccurate portrayal of that trial. There was a book written by a New York Pulitzer Prize-winning author. I don't remember his name, but the book was called Summer of the Gods. And that was in the 1990s that he published that work. The climate had so shifted in America that even before the statute of limitations on things were out, the authors outed themselves. And the authors were two folks who were on the list for investigation by the House Committee on Un-American Activities. And so they wrote that play to portray people who were against communism and who were interested in ferreting out communists within the government and the entertainment industry, to being like those horrible country bumpkins who were Bible thumpers down there in Dayton, Tennessee in 1925.
But that's who they had to come in, the actors of that play in 1991 for the bicentennial.
Yes, for the bicentennial of the Bill of Rights.
Wow.
And it was an offense. It was a pointed effort to offend the Creator and to mock the idea of a Creator as the originator of our rights. But, you know, born, made in the image of God, or just a happenstance, a blip on the screen of evolutionary existence.
Yeah. Anyway, so if someone wants to get a true picture of history, the true picture of history, and I know God is still in Philadelphia, because one summer a mutual friend and I went to find out if God was still in Philadelphia, and he is. You just have to look real hard for him. But William Penn's prayer is still posted up on the City Hall there in Philadelphia. And there's evidence in Carpenter's Hall. If you look on the floor, one of the tiles mentions God. But speaking of Carpenter's Hall, there's an original painting that's been missing for decades depicting Reverend Duché when he was kneeling with the Continental Congress as they were opening their session. That's been missing for decades. But if people want to get a true history of Philadelphia, which includes God, there's no doubt about that, how can they do that?
Well, we have, through American Liberty Tours, we offer tour guide services for folks who want to explore our legacy of liberty and faith. And they can go to our website at AmericanLibertyTours.com, and there is a variety of suggested tours, and we can arrange whatever they want within the footwork and traffic of being able to easily accommodate it. But there are some suggested tours, and we are glad to offer our services as a tour guide to bring out those other aspects that are most often left out.
Yeah, totally ignored.
Totally ignored.
I mean, rewriting history right in our face is what's happening. And I see that really as being a major issue with the country and look at how the young people are reacting, how they're acting now. They're being taught in public school that America's a terrible country and that capitalism is terrible. And they're totally being misled, deliberately being misled as to who this country is and where we came from as a people. And it's just tragic. So I do encourage folks to go to AmericanLibertyTours.com if you're interested in getting a true picture of America's history in Philadelphia area. You do Valley Forge. I saw you also did Annapolis. So AmericanLibertyTours.com, and I do encourage folks to check into that.
Diane,
go ahead.
Do you have time for me to read a quote, very brief, from a book called Why Do the Heathen Rage, which is a compilation of newspaper articles published in out of Atlanta, but in many newspapers throughout the country, and this was in 1969.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
He has given an account of the parliamentary government protectorate under Cromwell in England. Then he says, do not forget the past. The above recalls to remembrance some very significant history of our past. It's the first step in the downfall of our democratic institutions, forgetting.
Wow.
The second downward step is indifference.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is utter recklessness. Are not our democratic institutions now fast failing in favor of institutions of socialism and communism? Lord God of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget.
That was fantastic. That was in 69.
1969, yes.
Wow. What was it? Forgetting, what were the other two?
Indifference.
Okay.
And then recklessness.
Indifference and recklessness.
Yeah.
So very, very appropriate.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks so much, Karis, and encourage folks to go to AmericanLibertyTours.com to check out, and people can contact you, obviously, through that website.
Be glad to talk with them.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, you take care.
Thank you so very much.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, God bless you. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.